meeting. Let's give a big round of applause to our next speaker, Rick T.
I'm Rick. I'm an addict. Can you hear this thing all right? It's hard for me to tell. Hi, thank you. Oh, man, you know what? I'm kind of nervous. You know, I was all worked up. Nancy was up here and she was sharing, and I'm like, was all calm. And then she started, I could tell she was starting to wrap up, and I started getting nervous, and I'm thinking, oh, crap, man. And then they started that raffle. And I thought, what the hell? So I kind of like, it's like when I was getting high, man, I was like peeking, and then all of a sudden, it's like everything left. And it was like, what happened, man? I missed the buzz, you know? And so I had to walk outside and return a phone call and say a little prayer, because I feed off you. When I do stuff like this, I feed off the human energy. And so, actually, I wish everybody was up here, but you're not, and it's okay. I want to say something. Thanks, Jack. I want to say something that, man, you know, when I came in through the doors of Narcotics Anonymous, thank you, that feels like support. When I came into the doors of Narcotics Anonymous, man, I was a wannabe. I'd been out of the penitentiary about 11 months, managed to not get arrested, still using. And I came into recovery because I wanted to get out of the cold. My clean date is November 16th, 1986. Today is 33 years. Today. And I want, thank you. And I wanted to, I was scared, man. I was 35 years old. I've been shot at, stabbed, beat over the head. Been in some pretty rough situations, you guys know. But I was scared to death to sit in these rooms and tell you who I was and let you know who I was and talk about feelings. Terrified. I'd rather get shot at. That's the truth. That sounds nuts. But that's how I felt. And you know what I want to tell you is that, where are the new people? Did they leave? There's Elmer. I met Elmer this morning at a meeting, man. I want you to get to know Elmer because he's new. And, you know, we try not to embarrass you, right? But we do. But, you know, how else are we going to get to know people, right? We've got to kind of front them off, man. And so they pulled my covers a lot when I was new. I was talking about what I was like a little bit. I don't want to spend a lot of time there. I just want to share this with you, just for identification with the new people, because I'm not going to go into a drug a lot. Number one, I don't have time, and number two, I try not to do that too much anymore. But I need to let you know a little bit about me so you can identify. And probably the quickest and simplest way I can do that is say the best that I can recall. When I came into the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, I had nothing, and I was nothing. I had nothing. It had all gone right there. And I was nothing. I felt like nothing. Okay? But I had to put up this. I felt like I had to put up this front. You know? I had a. This used to be up a little higher. True story. And at least I thought it was. And, you know, I had the penitentiary haircut and I smoked Camel non-filters. And this time of year, I still wore tank tops because, you know, I wanted you to kind of see some of that. And my goal was to keep you at a distance and to protect, you know, all the insecurities that I had inside. See, when I was 5 years old, something happened to me and it planted a seed of shame. But see, I didn't know that. And I didn't know that growing up, why I felt different. And I didn't know that when I ran into that, when I had my first experience with any chemicals. First one was glue, spot remover, alcohol. That's kind of how it went for me. And I didn't realize that when I was using those kind of chemicals, that it was kind of medicating that shame. I mean, I didn't get it. I was a kid. I didn't process it. I couldn't put 2 + 2, right? It's 3. But that's what was happening, you know. And then, you know, I have this, you guys understand this obsession to use and compulsion, right? And I didn't know all that stuff when I was using. Would I have still used whether I'd know? I don't know. Probably. I probably would have thought it wouldn't happen to me, right? And so when I got to Tulare County, I was in a bad way, some legal problems and things like that, and just trying to figure out where I was going to go. And so anyway, I ended up in this place. I got to tell you this little story real quick. When I was at CCI in Tehachapi, and I paroled out of there December 23rd, 1985, and I haven't been back to any institution other than on an H&I panel. Okay? Thank God they let me out. But, you know, I had my cellie was from Visalia. He was a biker dude, and he was from Visalia. Hey, Rick, when you get out, come and see me. And I'm like, I grew up in Bakersfield, Oldale to be exact. And I said, Kenny, I'm not coming to Visalia, man. You know, I'm not going to be one of those guys, yeah, Holmes, I'll see you on the streets. You know, it's like, I'm not going there, man. And, you know, that was in December, and in July 3rd, I was in Visalia, California. So I don't know who's in charge of my life, but it's not me. And so there I was. I have never seen him since, and that's probably good. But, you know, and so I come into Narcotics Anonymous, man. And by the way, some of you guys know in those days, you know, we didn't have a lot of NA meetings. So I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's where I met Mike, my good friend Mike, and a lot of other people. And I think we had 2 meetings a week, then we worked on 3. And May 18th, 1988, Jeff would remember that, we had we formed our area. And I was able to be there in that meeting, man. It was a year and a half clean. And, man, Narcotics Anonymous exploded. For me, it just seemed like, wow, man, we have meetings every day. If you went to Tulare, Hanford, Porterville, and, you know, you could go every day, man. There was a guy named Roy Buckmaster. He passed away, and he was kind of a... Oh, he was great, man. He was an old Dauphine, and just kind of, he used to bang, you know, one of those guys that would bang the counter and all that. And he said something one day that just stuck with me. And he said, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. Because we had to do that. But Narcotics Anonymous set me free. And man, do I relate to that, you know? That's what I relate to, because here I'm home. I can talk about, you know, how I really lived, you know. And I'm not knocking those people. I go back once in a while to pay my respects. I do. You know, I'll pop into the Alano Club or a meeting. And I know a lot of those people, man, and I love them, and they love me. And so I go say hi once in a while. It's amazing. I don't know how long I got, but I'm last, so I can talk as long as I want. No, I'm kidding. See, I get arrogant sometimes. It's one of my... you don't have no idea, man, how much work it is to be me. Jesus, I'm so full of myself and other things at times. But, you know, and a lot of times, though, I kid about it. I really joke about it. But anyway, the ones that laugh are like me. You know, I want to touch on some key things, if I could. Things I've been thinking about, because I've been thinking about, what am I going to say up here? And I think Nancy talked about carrying a clear message of Narcotics Anonymous, and that's important to me. I respect our traditions. We need to follow our traditions. Like, and no, I won't go there yet. And, you know, I didn't want to spend a long time talking about junk, you know. I thought, well, I could kind of take them through like what it was like in 1 to 5 and 5 to 10, and that might take too long and I can't remember it all. But, you know, I want to share some things that are current right now, okay? And remember, I was tough when I got here, and I didn't cry. And now, I can't get up here without crying, you know? What a wuss, huh? No, you know what happened, newcomers, is my emotions thawed out. I've been in so much pain for so long with nowhere to take it. And I finally found a place to take it. And I'm not dying, you know, I'm not writhing in pain these days. I get really grateful when I talk about these things, man, because, man, what are the alternatives? It's right here for me. What is there left to do? Go on to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death? Or find a new way to live? You know, I found a new way to live. And to do that, for this addict to stay here, I got to be honest and just let it go, man. Put the clutch in, put it in gear, and go. So I don't know any other way. I try to be phony. It didn't work too well. I piss people off. And then I get angry at myself. So I just try to be me. I had a great day. I heard a guy say this not too long ago, and I just loved it. I think if you count up, I think I count it right, if I remember right, I have that NA app where you can count your clean time in days, and I guess it shows you all those cool key tags and shit. I think 33 years is 12,053 days, I think, something like that. And so, but I heard a guy with 37 years say this just a couple of weeks ago. He said, today is the most important day in my life. It's the day I don't use. Okay? That's the day. That's the one that counts. I mean, for me, and when he said that, I just went, shit. You know? I've heard one day at a time so many times, right? We say it all the time. Keep coming back one day at a time, all that stuff. And today's the most important day. This is the day I don't use. I like that. I try to keep things simple. And I got some phone calls and texts and, you know, that social media stuff that kind of, you know, makes me feel good. And I got to tell you something. I go to the Friends of Jimmy Cave pretty regularly on the days that I'm. It's a Saturday morning men's group. And we sign a base, just for today. We pass it around every meeting and people sign it and you can put whatever you want in it. Well, it'd be nice. But on mine, my clean date is November 16th. So I always open it to that page, and it's talking about isolation and alienation. If you read it today, you know what it's talking about. That's me, man. I mean, I'm more comfortable sitting at home with a remote and a computer than I am up here or interacting with you. I'm very socially awkward. Some of you probably noticed that, like, what's wrong with him? Yeah, I don't really know how to engage appropriately sometimes, okay? And then other days, you know, I'm pretty good or I'm okay at it. And I think that, for me, it's directly contingent on how plugged in I am with my higher power, okay? Because IP19 that this young lady talked about, I get it. I've read it many times. There's a meeting in Fresno. That's the topic, you know. Still going on today, I think. I got to be careful. I get off topic and I can't find my way back. But what was I talking about? Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, that too. But at the I really lost my train of thought. Damn it! I hate when I do that. But pardon me. Oh, there you go. Thank you. See, I can't do this alone. There's evidence, right? It's right. See, I get off topic and I don't leave enough breadcrumbs to find my way home, man. Like Hansel and Gretel, you know, I can't do it, man. And you know, I had a great day, and this morning, oh yeah, I got these texts and these phone calls. I got to tell you about this one call. Oh yeah, sign in the book. See, it comes back. Thank you. I put my phone number and clean date in this book. Well, I got a call this morning from James C. in Oregon. And he goes, "Hey, happy birthday. I got this book a few years ago at the meeting, and I'm reading it, and I saw your birthday, and I wanted to wish you a happy birthday." I thought, thank you. You know, thank you, man. You know, just another gift. And I go to Jimmy K, and they got a chip for me, and I got to lie to them a little bit, and I didn't, not much. Matt Elmer, and talked to him a little bit. I'm just glad he's here. And then today I went to lunch with my son and daughter-in-law. That's their belly buttons. Her belly button is today, and Mike's, our son, is tomorrow. And so we did a little, like, we went by and got some Chinese, took over there, and then and now I'm here, man. It's been a full day. You know, it's been a great day. It's been a beautiful day. And, you know, gosh, I got to share some things that have happened, because, you know, as we worked the program, I did a lot of damage. Let me say it this way. I did a lot of damage to my family. You know, I have four children. They're not children. They're grown adults. Like, they're all in their 40s. God dang. Yeah. I mean, I got clean when I'm 35. I'm 33 years clean. That makes me 49. Right? Yeah, man. But they're aging, and you know, I did a lot of damage to them, and without getting way into all that story, I could spend a whole couple hours just talking about that. When I got to ninth step 8 and 9, I was able to. I had the ability to, number one, find 3 out of the 4, and go to them in Alaska, Portland, Oregon, and Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and do a direct amends with them. And you know, the program doesn't promise that you're going to be forgiven. It doesn't give us those promises. At least that's how I understand it. And when I went and did those amends, it was, yeah, okay. And they listened, and we hugged, and we cried, and we, you know, it seemed like, yeah, okay, we're going to, like, repair all this damage that I did, because I was a terrible father. You know, I caused a lot of damage, you know, by my not being there. I abandoned them. Okay? That's the damage I did. And so, you know, after I left and several attempts to stay in contact continue to work on the relationship, it hasn't worked out that well. You know, my youngest daughter and my other son, they don't really talk to me anymore. My oldest daughter does, and so I went back in April and saw her again. And I have a granddaughter back there. She's going to be 23 years old this January 5th. And about 2 years ago, man, she blew me up, man. We've been texting and staying in contact, and she was pregnant, and she says, "I want you to come back." First of all, she blew me up a couple of years on my birthday, sent me this long text, and I couldn't read it without crying. You know, it was like, "I'm so proud of you and the person you've become." And, you know, I'm just like, I was trying to read it to some people at a meeting, and I couldn't. And I was, you know, it was just one of those things. I went back, and I got to go to her first doctor's appointment. Well, not first doctor's appointment. The doctor's appointment where they listen to the heartbeat. Uh-huh. Isn't that cool? And I heard the, you know, that noise, and I got that on my phone now. I got, you know, and I got to be a part of that. And I was never included in any of their marriages, any of the birth of any of their children. I was never included. I wanted to be there, but I was never included. Okay? This felt great because I was included. Okay? I can't wait to go back. Eli, James, Keith Lee entered the world October 23rd, about 9 p.m., 6.5 pounds, 16 3/4 inches. Good looking, dude. My granddaughter and I are arguing on who's responsible for that. And I can't wait to go back. You see, and where there's breath, there's hope. Okay, in other words, as long as, you know, I mean, I'm not promised any of this stuff, you know. But anything is possible, you guys know. And you know, this is, I want more. I would love to have all of my family included, but this is what I got. And so I've just got to be okay with it, do the best I can to accept it. And I'm happier in hell to do that, trust me. Trust me. It's like when you got no, you know, you got no shoes, and then you see a man with no feet, you know, you're pretty grateful. And you know, I'm grateful to have what I have. And so I don't know when I'm going to get to go back, probably after the first year, I'm thinking. But I'm going to go back and meet Eli. And I'm a great-grandfather. How the hell? Now, this is the interesting part. I'm a great-grandfather, but Jerry's not a great-grandmother. I don't know how that works. Right? Yeah, she's too young to be a great-grandmother. Yeah, so those are just some of the joys, you know, that I've experienced in my life. I'm not going to keep you much longer, but I want to see. I'm looking around the room and looking for the new people, man. And there's not a lot that I know you're not new. Elmer is. So don't let Elmer leave without phone numbers, guys. You know, he's from here, and he likes the Monday and Thursday night meetings, so you guys are doing something right, okay? So make him feel welcome when he's here, and anybody else, man. You know, a little bit about marriage and things, because all of you talked about that, and I thought, oh, shit, how can I top that? You know, I really can't, but... You know, my wife and I, Jerry, most of you know Jerry, we've been married 25 years. You know, and you can do that if you want. But I want to put it into perspective. That's why I'm saying it. It's, you know, give you a little, like, kind of thing. And it's been interesting, mostly good. You know, working on relationships has been very difficult. This is my third marriage. And a couple of other, I call them long-term relationships, longer than 6 months, right? That's long-term. But I want to share with you, it's the first one that's obviously worked for this long. And part of the reason, I believe, is because of the communication. Now, I'm not the best communicator. I'm not going to sit up here and lie because she's going to tell on me. But I'm not, you know. I mean, I can stand up here. It's crazy. I can sit up here, stand up here, and do pretty damn good and be pretty open with you. But, man, when I sit across from her in the living room, holy crap. There's just something happens to this attic, you know. It's like self-defense, I think. I don't know. But it's difficult for me. But I've gotten a lot better at it. And one of the things we did when we were dating, because, I asked her to marry her, and she didn't know I did. She had to call me later and go, "Did you just ask me to marry you?" I tell you, I'm not a good communicator. Like, yeah, Would you if I... Oh, I think I said, would you? Yeah, okay, she's going to help me. You know, a lot of my life is hearsay. Then I got married and it became hearsay. Just kidding. No, no, I'm not. But, you know, she had to ask me. And I said, well, if you said yes, would you? Or would you if I asked you? And she said, yeah. And I go, okay, I did. You know, and so that was kind of it. And you know, but we went and had a talk where, you know, I joke about stuff like that. But, you know, it was terrifying for this addict, you know. I'd rather be out in the streets dealing with that stuff than do some of this stuff in here, the real life stuff. You know, not really, but that's how terrified and afraid I get. You know, we went to this park and had this discussion about kind of boundaries before we even had sex. Now, who does that? I never did that. And, you know, it's like get in bed and hope they like you later kind of thing. And it never worked. And you know, now I get it, you know. Oh, communication and intimacy, that's part of a relationship. It's just not about physical contact, right? And shooting dope together. I mean, those are my relationships. And, you know, so, I mean, it's been a lot of work. There's been times she probably wanted to kill me and I've not been happy with her. And there's been times that we've been great together, you know. Been through a lot. My father passed. Both of her parents have passed. My mother has Alzheimer's. She doesn't know who we are. So... You know, that's a tough one. We don't go visit her anymore. She doesn't know who we are. And when I just want to cry when I leave. It's like, that's my mom's body, but that's not my mom, you know, kind of thing. So we made a family decision a couple of years ago that my sister was just going to make sure her needs were met. She'll be 86 this month. So we've gone through some of those things, is my point. And survived. I had a triple bypass surgery, heart surgery, 3 months ago, 12 weeks ago, man. I mean, they cut me open and I guess rerouted some stuff, and it was a pretty major surgery. And I think she probably took it harder than me. I'm like, I'm all right, you know, I'm cool. I mean, I'm walking around, look at this, you know, check this out. And but it was pretty scary. It's not to be taken lightly. And you know, I'm trying to take care of myself, trying to eat a little bit better. You know, as I progress in recovery, especially want the newcomers to understand this. I know a lot of you do. It's always about not using. Okay, this program. It's always number one priority, at least for this addict, about not using, not taking nothing. But as we stick around, then it becomes about other things too. You know, and I've struggled with the physical part. You know, it took me a long time to quit smoking. It took me a long time to, you know, I still struggle with food. I was telling somebody walking back from the restroom a minute ago, it's like, I didn't realize you know, how powerful my obsessions are when it comes to food until I try to, like, get a handle on it, man. And then give me a candy bar and, like, you know, I'm hiding shit. Jerry found some of my stash the other day. I'm like, I didn't know I had that, you know. And it's like, man, it's just powerful. I'm obsessed, so I can't have one. So just try to, you know, just try to deal with those things. But I want to share with you a miracle, a couple of them. That's a pretty major surgery. On a Thursday, August 22nd, I had the surgery. Thursday, August 29th, I took my last pain medication from that surgery. You know, a week. I'm not bragging, and I'm not trying to be a tough guy. It was like, I didn't need it anymore, man. I didn't need it, you know? I mean, there was some discomfort, but there wasn't any pain. And so that's a miracle for an addict like me, Elmer. Pay attention. Because, you know, the obsession to use was lifted. The obsession to use was lifted. I was an addict who wanted to use every day. For years. Every day. First thing I woke up, boink, okay, after I got over being scared for about 10 seconds, what am I going to do? I'm going to go hustle. I'm going to go get mine. Okay. That's gone. How does that happen to an ad? You know, it's in this program. If I can find it real quick. How it works. It's right there. That's how it works. You know? Step one, I'm an addict. Step two, I'm nuts. I'm insane. And I'm going to get in contact with some kind of higher power. Step three, I'm going to let them guide my life. I'm going to clean house 4 through 9. And then I'm going to maintain 10, 11, and 12. Do the best that I can. You know, so, you know, thank you for inviting me here. I appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to be of service to narcotics in any other way I can. I do service that's just kind of in the background these days, and that's how I prefer it, personally. My motives for being of service have changed. I wanted to be a big shot and be, you know, out front and like, look what I'm doing. And plus, I didn't like to be alone at times, and I was afraid of that. So, anyway, it was good. I loved hearing your story. New Zealand, that's awesome. My Jerry has a girlfriend in New Zealand. She just moved from here to there. So that's in the medical profession. So it's interesting. And Rick, love you, man. Nancy, love you. It was good hanging out with you guys. Thank you for allowing me to share.